second case this morning is 2021-998, State of Ohio versus Richard M. Huff. For the appellant, Ms. Bader.
Good morning, Chief Justice. May it please the court. My name is Victoria Bader, and I'm counsel for appellant Richard Huff. I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. Richard Huff has a full-scale IQ of 59 and functions in the bottom 1% of verbal comprehension and perceptive reasoning. He also suffers from schizophrenia and bipolar disorder. But that information was not known until sentencing, because the trial court refused to hold a hearing on Mr. Huff's pre-trial motion for a competency determination. There's no question that a trial court errs when it fails to hold a hearing on a defendant's pre-trial motion.
Counsel, why was the request made so close to trial?
The information regarding that in the record comes from sentencing, and it is defense counsel's statement that she filed the motion as soon as she became aware of it. It was 17 months into this case. The case was pending for 22 months before the case actually went to trial. It was continued 11 separate times. And as is standard practice in Franklin County and many counties, when somebody is out on bond, the continuance hearings are not held in the courtroom, rather done on paper and filed in the court.
So what happened that triggered trial counsel's request when it was made?
There is nothing in the record that would indicate what triggered the request. Certainly could speculate as to why, but certainly in these types of cases, when so many continuances were made, it's likely that 7 weeks before trial may have been the first time that defense counsel in this case had substantial conversations with the defendant because he was out on bond. And at that time, it became apparent to her that Mr. Huff had some problems understanding concepts or potentially assisting in his own defense.
Is it your position that whenever the issue of competency or incompetency for trial arises and defense counsel recognizes it, is it your position that at all times the trial court should conduct a hearing on the competency to stand trial?
Yes, Your Honor. As the statute requires, if a defense attorney files a motion, if the court, prosecutor, or defense raises the issue, not just files a motion, but raises the issue prior to trial, the court shall hold a hearing. There's a different standard if the issue is raised mid-trial, and that is only for good cause shown. But in these circumstances, when a motion is raised, in this case a motion, but the issue is raised, that's all that's required, prior to trial, the trial court shall hold a hearing.
Prior to trial, was there any indicia of incompetence?
The defense attorney's motion.
She filed a motion. I read that.
Yep.
It doesn't mention anything. It just says, I want a competency hearing. Doesn't give any factors, doesn't allege anything, right?
That's correct, Your Honor. But the statute doesn't require that the motion contain any indicia of incompetence, because that happens at the hearing. The hearing is where the defendant and their defense attorney are able to raise issues related to incompetence. So in this case, there's nothing required that is more than merely raising the issue, and the mere raising of the issue is what triggers the need for a hearing, at which a defendant would then have the opportunity to build a record. And Mr. Huff was denied that opportunity in this case.
Is there ever an instance where there may be attorney-client privilege issues that would get in the way of actually putting some of that or all of that information into a motion?
Yes, Your Honor, absolutely. That the defense counsel, we don't know what brought this to light, what conversations with Mr. Huff brought these concerns to light, but there are certainly concerns that those conversations could relate to a confidential attorney-client information.
Counsel, does it matter that, according to the trial court in the state, I would imagine that there's no indicia of impairment during the trial. So, in other words, if you kind of backdate that, the denial of the competency hearing was justified. I mean, basically, that's what they're saying, correct?
Yes, Your Honor. Essentially, what they're saying is there was nothing, no indicia of incompetency is what the Court of Appeals found in the record, aside from the post-verdict motion that or report that was filed.
Mm-hmm.
And what they relied on is the fact that there were no outbursts in court, no outward manifestations. And that cannot be the standard. Certainly, demeanor is something that can be considered in making the ultimate decision. But as the United States Supreme Court has held, and this court has reiterated, demeanor alone cannot be a reason to dispense with this hearing in this case.
Do we need to overrule Brock?
No, Your Honor. I'm not asking this court to overrule Bach. I recognize that the Bach standard has been in place for 30 years. The standard is harmless error unless there is sufficient indicia of incompetence in the record. However, the facts in Bach are very different than the facts in this case. In Bach, the defendant testified in his own defense. He was subject to extensive cross-examination. And this court held in that case that it was clear from the record that Mr. Bach did not have trouble understanding the questions asked of him or articulating answers, and that was sufficient to overcome the concerns related to not holding a hearing. However, the facts of the case are very different and, frankly, unique in the fact that I haven't seen any cases like this. This is essentially, prior to the sentencing hearing, a silent record with regard to both competence and incompetence. As you mentioned, Justice Fischer, there is nothing in the record aside from the defendant's motion, prior to this report, that would indicate competence or incompetence. And it's unique in the fact that this report gives this court the unique perspective of hindsight, that had this report, that is highly unusual to see in a non-capital case at sentencing.
If we agree with you, I hear what you're saying. If we agree with you, wouldn't every defense counsel file one of these? Why not? You could demand a hearing every case, even if there's no indicia of incompetence.
I certainly understand your question, but the rules of professional conduct prohibit attorneys from filing frivolous motions. And so certainly there are other ways to remedy that. If there is a belief that there is a frivolous motion being filed, the rules of professional conduct allow for ways to deal with that in disciplining an attorney. But in this case, that's not the case here. And it is clear, although there is nothing in the record prior to sentencing, the sentencing transcript makes clear that defense counsel in this case truly believed that Mr. Huff had difficulties understanding what was going on.
Well, if that's the case, so why didn't defense counsel, he filed the motion, it wasn't ruled on, and then he never said a word the rest of the trial? Why not say, Judge, I have this outstanding motion. I need a ruling on that.
Certainly that would.
It's not really explicit, but one of the things I think implicit in the Court of Appeals decision is the fact that there's nothing to indicate throughout this proceeding that defense counsel thought there was any issue about competence. It filed the one-line motion. The judge didn't rule on it. Maybe the judge thought his other ruling took care of it. Counsel never raised that issue again. Counsel never seemed concerned about it until sentencing.
Yes, Your Honor. And it's true, there were two separate motions in this case, filed at the same time, both of them very short motions, one requesting a sanity evaluation to determine his sanity at the time of the offense, and the separate motion to determine competency at the time of trial. And in this case, the trial court only ruled on the sanity motion, did not rule on the competency motion. I think that it's clear, and I think the state concedes that everyone believed that this motion had been denied. And that's also exhibited from defense counsel's statements at sentencing, that the trial court had denied her motion, and that was her belief. And so it seems that everybody believed that it had been denied. And the defense attorney in this case likely did not believe that the trial court would entertain any additional objections. There's no need to make futile objections. The issue was preserved. It was presumed to be denied. And based on the trial court's tone in its entry regarding the sanity motion, saying that it was incredulous that they had filed this motion this late in time, and also the trial court's statements at sentencing, saying, I don't want to go there again, essentially. When the issue of competence or concerns about competence were re-raised at sentencing, the trial court did not want to address this issue again.
Isn't that kind of the attorney's job to say, well, whether you want to go there or not, I think this is an issue, to make that record?
I would agree that it is absolutely best practice to raise this repeatedly. However, that's not what's required by statute.
So going back to Justice Fischer's question, is it your experience that if a person's faking it, and there's an evaluation, that the evaluating professional generally points that out in a report?
Yes, Your Honor. There are tests for malingering, and in the evaluation that was submitted for sentencing in this case, there was a test done for malingering. And so I understand that trial courts and Justice Fisher mentioned that there are concerns that somebody could be malingering or somebody could be feigning incompetence. However, as you mentioned, Justice Bruner, there are specific tests for that, and we should be relying on experts to give us this information.
And it would be a terrible trial strategy if counsel didn't think there was a problem and went forward with it to have a report like that the person was feigning, correct?
Yes, Your Honor. So I did want to turn to the issues that were presented in this case. So we have essentially a silent record prior to sentencing. Because there was no hearing, there was nothing in the record that indicated competence or incompetence aside from the motion that was filed by trial counsel. And we must give great weight to those motions in those cases. And I think that this case is perfectly highlights the reason that this has to be the case is because we have the benefit of hindsight in seeing that report that indicates that Mr. Huff had a full-scale IQ of 59 and functioned in the range of an individual with an intellectual disability. He had been diagnosed with schizophrenia and bipolar disorder. Medical records and the psychological evaluation both mentioned that he was appearing to internal stimuli during evaluations. He believes that people are out to get him and can control his thoughts. 1 week before the incident, he was found lying in the street believing that he was being chased. And defense counsel, who was in the best position to determine understanding and ability to assist, filed the motion for competency and reiterated those concerns at sentencing. Mr. Huff suffers from severe mental illness and functions in the extremely low range of intellectual functioning.
But those findings could still be made and he'd be found competent to stand trial.
Yes, Your Honor. And the report that we have here was not a competency report. It was a psychological report for the purposes of sentencing mitigation. And so there was no context from the evaluator in this case as to whether or not Mr. Huff understood the nature of the proceedings, the objectives, or was able to assist in his own defense. But these certainly are all indicia of incompetence. And that's what the current box standard requires, is sufficient indicia.
Is there any to your knowledge, any case law or any authority for the proposition that the trial court has discretion on whether to grant a competency hearing when raised by the state or by defense counsel under
the
statute?
Not in these circumstances, Your Honor. The statute allows for judicial discretion when the issue is raised mid-trial.
No, but I mean in this case, pre-trial, if there's any indication or concern about competency, either by defense counsel or the state, is there any authority that allows the court discretion not to hold a hearing?
No, Your Honor. It is a mandatory duty on the court.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Huff's case highlights a gap in Ohio's appellate standard of review that denies individuals meaningful appellate review when they're precluded from building a record on the issue of competence. As a result, Mr. Huff asks this court to clarify that absent evidence of competence in the record, a motion for a competency determination constitutes sufficient indicia of incompetence requiring reversal. Unless there are further questions, I'll reserve the remainder of my time.
Yeah, you were telling me about could be from attorney-client contacts or...
I'm sorry, I missed that.
You mentioned earlier that one of the reasons maybe it wasn't raised earlier was because attorney-client communications, right?
Yes.
But he was found somewhere on the street laying down, right? A week before the event?
That was a week before the incident, yes.
Yeah. And that wouldn't be an attorney-client communication, would it? That's public.
That's correct. And that
so
was
that
in
could
the
have been raised in the motion to at least give the judge some basis.
And I'm not, part of that comes from the medical records that were available in this case, and I'm not sure based on the record, there's just nothing in the record that indicates when defense counsel obtained copies of those medical records and would have become aware of the fact that he was hospitalized. And so based on what we know and based on this record, it appears that defense counsel raised the issue when she became aware of the issue. It could have been at the time that she received those reports. It also could have been based on her communication with Mr. Huff.
Does the statute require any degree of specificity in the motion?
No, Your Honor, it does not. Just that the issue be raised, not even a motion, needs to be filed. there are no further questions, I'll reserve the remainder of my time.
Thank you. Ms. Pritchard?
Madam Chief Justice, may it please the court. Under Ohio Revised Code Section 294537, a defendant is presumed competent, and there is no basis here to believe that the defendant can overcome this presumption.
But how do we know? And what about defense counsel's, the appellant's counsel's assertion that the statute requires a hearing if competency is raised pre-trial?
Thank you, Your Honor. We know for several reasons. First of all, the absence of a record here is a record. The fact that we don't have outbursts, that we don't have counsel repeatedly bringing to the court's attention that there are issues or difficulties with the client or additional time
counsel,
needed.
What's the statute say about how many times the defense counsel has to raise it?
The statute does not require that it be raised more
exactly.
than once, Your Honor. Correct.
And it was raised once, and the statute says the court shall.
That's correct, Your Honor, and I don't argue with the fact that the court should have held a hearing, but what is important here is that this court in Bach has already found that failure to hold a hearing is harmless where there is no evidence of incompetence, and here there is no evidence of incompetence. We have a lot of things here in this record that we can look to show that we have indicia of competence.
But counsel, based on what we know, 59 IQ, schizophrenia, he could have been at the trial table with no understanding of what was taking place, and we would never know that because the record's silent as to that fact.
Yes, Your Honor.
I mean, if he took the stand in his own defense and was cross-examining, clearly he knew what was going on. I'd agree with you, but that's absent.
What we do have here, though, is we have a psych evaluation 2 weeks after that we can look to in this record to show we're in proximity of the time of trial here what was going on with this defendant. And what we have is a defendant who the examiner said understood why he was in jail, the charges, confidentiality.
Well, you said 2 weeks after. What are we talking about, 2 weeks after the offense?
The verdict, Your Honor.
The verdict.
Correct.
Okay.
And that examiner also said that this defendant understood the limits of confidentiality and the purpose for which that evaluation was being done. The examiner did not say anywhere in that report that there was difficulty explaining the concept of the evaluation or the concepts that were happening with regard to court.
He was on bail for a long time until the trial occurred, and then I assume after he was convicted, he was locked up. And I think we all know that sometimes the best mental health treatment a person gets in a situation like that is in jail. How do we know? How do we know that the 2 weeks didn't make a difference because he was 2 weeks in jail, evaluated and potentially receiving treatment?
Yes, Your Honor. Well, what we have is a defendant who was out on reporting recog. He was doing screens. He was complying with the reporting conditions at each juncture. His own roommate at sentencing noted that for the court. There's also in the record an indication, and I believe it's at, there was a drug screen that was done during the pendency. He remained clean during this period, and he was attending treatment. His roommate indicated he'd been to every court date. He was doing everything he could to take the matter seriously and comply with everything, clean himself up, coming in here doing the right thing.
Sure. Counsel, this is all evidence that either took place before the trial or after. Incompetency is fluid. People could be incompetent one day and then not the next if they suffer from mental illness.
Understandable, Your Honor, and that's perhaps why counsel didn't proceed along these lines. We have several things going on here. While some of this information we have is post-trial, we do have his reporting during a two-year almost period where he is complying with court conditions. He knows to come to court. He knows to be drug-free.
He knows that based on just him taking care of his own business. There's nobody that is saying, come on, Richard, we got to go see the judge today. Or, Richard, you've got to go for your drug treatment. Do you know how that all occurred?
Certainly not the specifics, Your Honor, but what we do know is that his roommate said that he'd been complying, he'd been going to treatment, and he'd been doing everything to stay clean.
Well, we understand that that's the fact. He was doing this, but you make it sound like, you know, he was doing this completely on his own because he was, able to do that, to determine dates and times and show up and get himself there and et cetera.
Yes, I understand that, Your Honor. The difficulty here is we can't know all those things. The person in the best position to know that would have been his counsel, and his counsel did not raise any of these issues before the court.
Okay,
they never.
But again, how many times does the counsel have to raise a request for a competency?
Your Honor, I would argue after it was denied, it should have at least been addressed once because of the fact that it appeared the judge was only addressing sanity. If you look at the entry by the court didn't address competency for purposes of standing trial. What was addressed, it was referring to Criminal Rule 11 and insanity at the time. When counsel noted that it was not addressed in that motion, that would have been an appropriate time, I submit, for counsel to say, hey, Judge, there's still an issue here. We have a competency issue with my client we need to address. It is never raised again. It's not even really raised at sentencing. What was raised at sentencing was, can we get an evaluation, Judge? You said that I would get one for mitigation. So even at that time, there was still no assertion. And counsel has an obligation in protecting their client and representing their client to bring things to
the court's
attention.
So you're making a case for ineffective assistance of counsel.
Well, I want to ask you this question. Do you agree with Ms. Bader that the motion was denied, motion for competency hearing? Because you just...
Just effectively, it was not addressed. It was never addressed. A hearing was never held.
Because in the statements you just made prior, one of the things you said, when the trial court denied the motion, and then you went on. So you agree that it was denied?
I agree that he denied the NGRI motion. Because the two were nearly identical, I think the court thought they were the same and just never addressed it. So it was never really denied. It was just never addressed, and a hearing was never held.
So you disagree that, because I think Ms. Bader said everybody agrees that the court denied the motion.
I would disagree with that.
You disagree.
But why would we have the ability to create a carve-out with different facts from the statute that's very clear, that doesn't really need any interpretation? I mean, what gives us the authority to do essentially, and I understand pragmatically why you would want it, but we would be doing a carve-out.
With respect to whether or not a hearing
should
have been held?
Sure, when the statute says if it's requested before trial, shall hold a hearing. How do we create a carve-out?
I agree that that's what the statute says, but it also says the defendant is presumed competent. And in light of this court's decision in Bach, it can be harmless error. I agree, best practice is obviously to hold a hearing. In circumstances like this, it appears this was overlooked, or perhaps maybe there's a strategy. I guess I can't be certain. But in circumstances like this, this court has said there is an ability to find harmless error.
Except, I'm sorry to interrupt, but the trial court was visibly, from the record, peeved about the request. Maybe it was the timing, but it was still before trial.
Your Honor,
that doesn't mitigate against the carve-out?
I would disagree with that. I think what the court was irritated with was thinking an NGRI, which should have been filed much, much, much earlier, was being addressed and brought up. So that's what the court was annoyed with in its entry. And then the only other time the court expressed any sort of dissatisfaction was at sentencing when it was brought up. The court even entertained a delayed motion to suppress filed just before trial.
How much earlier should the competency issue been brought up?
Well, the NGRI should have been brought up at the time he entered his plea. The competency, as we said, should have been brought up. It could be brought up at any time according to statute, including during trial. So I'm not alleging that there's a certain period at which the competency evaluation needed to be brought up.
You said it should have been brought up earlier, or at least that the court felt it should have been brought up earlier.
I think the court felt that it was an NGRI evaluation only, which should have been brought up earlier.
Okay.
Your Honor, it's clear looking at the record here that defense counsel said they had a team that had been pulling medical records. They were familiar with his background. They had been working on attempting to get them. That's at the transcript at 590. We have at least one interaction with the court because record at 132 shows a court reporter certificate was filed for a hearing April 8th. We have prior convictions. This defendant had prior interactions with the state and federal court. Sorry, Your Honor, my mouth is getting dry. And we have compliance during the period that this hearing was going on. So while I understand that the record does not show a great deal, it also doesn't show outburst complaints by counsel, failure to appear at hearings, anything in that psych evaluation besides a low IQ and mental illness, which this court and many courts have found are not indicia of incompetency. What we're looking for is, did this defendant have a basic understanding of the proceedings, and was he able to assist his counsel? And on this record, I think there's no question that using the standards set forth in Bach, that there is no indicia of incompetence here, and the error in failing to hold a hearing was harmless. If there are no additional questions, then.
One additional question.
Yes, Your Honor.
I think you talked about the potential of a remand, and if we remanded, what would happen? Would it be an entire new trial, or just I don't know. I think you kind of argued in your brief that competency after the fact doesn't really solve the original problem. So if there's a remand, it's a new trial, correct?
No, Your Honor. In this case, because we have an evaluation so close in time after the sentencing, there is evidence that could be presented. That evaluator could testify, he could discuss more specifically whether or not there are some additional factors that would indicate that this defendant understood what was going on at the time. There's a roommate. There are things that could be presented in the record for the court to make a determination as to whether or not this defendant was competent at that time. The court could also find that evidence isn't going to work, it's insufficient, and if that determination was made, then a new trial would need to be granted. But this could certainly be remanded for a hearing for the purpose to determine whether or not there's sufficient evidence at a hearing to provide for the fact that this defendant was, in fact, competent at the time of trial.
So it's still a statutory carve-out, correct? Because no matter what happened, we can't change the fact that the trial court didn't comply with the statute, correct?
That's correct, but we can still apply the harmless error standard.
So, counsel, you're suggesting you would send it back for a mini competency hearing, but you wouldn't have ordered a competency report. You would just use the testimony of lay people and a psych that didn't do a competency hearing, only did an evaluation for the purposes of sentencing, correct?
That's partly true, Your Honor, but also there was a notation that counsel already had some information from this doctor, so that report, while it may have focused on sentencing aspects, that professional may have some additional information. At 560 of the transcript, counsel said, we already have the report. We already agreed to do it. It's a matter of how long it takes them to get it written. So there could be some additional evidence there to show whether that defendant was evaluated
previously.
But
it's not a competency report.
I'm uncertain, based upon counsel's representations, whether that could have possibly been addressed and not presented to the court, Your Honor.
Wait a minute. You think that the psych eval, for the purpose of sentencing, you suspect it also bled over into a competency report and that wasn't presented to the court?
No, Your Honor. Just by virtue of the fact of the statement made at transcript page 590, it suggests there may have been some other conversations or possibly something else that was done. I'm not saying with any certainty, but there may be additional evidence to be gleaned in talking with that professional. So I'm saying there might be some additional evidence from a professional regarding competence in addition to just lay people or ordering an additional report.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. First, I'd like to address Justice Bruner's question regarding remedy. I know that the state's position is this could be remanded for a competency determination specifically without the need for a new trial. However, that position is in opposite to the United States Supreme Court's precedent in Dusky, Drope, and Pate, and the way that this court resolved the State v. Ware case. Because the need for a competency determination must be contemporaneous, it is competence at the time of trial, we cannot retrospectively apply a competency determination. So the proper remedy in this case would be a remand for a new trial.
But, okay, remand for a new trial and presumably a competency request?
Yes, Your Honor. The way the United States Supreme Court has dealt with this is remand for a new trial, and if the defendant raises the issue of competence again, a competency hearing prior to the new trial.
And what do you think about the prosecutor's solution here is to, in essence, reopen the hearing that was being held in conjunction with sentencing and expand the questioning of the mental health evaluator?
That's not appropriate at this time, Your Honor. One, for the reason that so far past that sentencing hearing and the time of trial, it cannot be said that he was competent to stand trial at that time. It's in relation to current competence to stand trial. And so his constitutional right at that time was to be tried while not competent, and he did not receive the benefit of a hearing and that determination at that time, and we cannot say today that he was not competent to stand trial then. And so the appropriate remedy in this case would be for a new trial and presumably a competency evaluation as well, presuming that defense counsel raises that issue again.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. We will take the matter under advisement. You'll be notified of our decision. Marshall, will you call a recess?
All rise.
Thank you.